Senate, Congress, governor, state senate, and state representative, and to have ballots counted at the state level in multiple rounds in which last place candidates are eliminated until a candidate wins by majority. Joining me in our studio is Representative Heather Soraki of Scarborough. She's opposed to the ballot initiative. And representing Yes on 5 is Kyle Bailey, campaign manager of the Committee for Ranked Choice Voting. Join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Heather and Kyle, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Kyle, first explain how ranked choice voting works.
So it's pretty simple and straightforward. We rank choices every day of our lives. With a ranked choice ballot, you have the option to rank candidates from your favorite to your least favorite. So your first choice, your second choice, your third choice, and so on. With our initiative, you can rank as many or as few candidates as you like, up to five. Knowing that if no candidate receives an outright majority and your favorite candidate can't win, your vote's not wasted. It counts for your second choice. And round by round, we all participate as voters in helping to elect a candidate more broadly by restoring majority rule, eliminating the spoiler effect in elections, encouraging candidates to run more civil campaigns, and a focus more on the issues so that candidates who are elected have a mandate to lead and govern. We can break some of the polarization gridlock we see in our politics.
So, and we'll explain some more in detail how it works, how the votes are transferred after each round to the other candidates. And you've made somewhat of a case for it here, but what's wrong with the way that we have been electing our public officials for so many years?
So in 9 of the last 11 elections for Maine's governor, the candidate who won received less than 50% of the votes cast. In 5 of those races, the candidate received less than 40% of the votes. So over 60% of voters were voting for someone else. In races that have been increasingly defined by the spoiler effect, where voters were determining based on polling and viability, you know, who is the spoiler, I don't want to waste my vote, conversations become all about strategic questions rather than substantive issues, policy discussions. And the candidate to win may actually be opposed by a majority of voters. So ranked choice voting ensures that candidates who are opposed by a majority of voters can never win. And what happens is when candidates can win with, say, 35% of the vote, they can win by energizing and turning out an enthusiastic and narrow base of political supporters who may not be representative of a majority of Mainers. And special interests can have a lot of sway and power in electing politicians with small percentages. And when those politicians go to work in Augusta or Washington, they're really accountable to a small faction of voters. With ranked choice voting, we restore majority rule. So politicians are more representative of Maine people and more accountable to Maine people in elections that are significantly improved over the way we have them now.
Heather Soraki, why is this, in your view, not an improvement?
Well, there are a number of reasons why I feel this way. For one reason, Kyle just mentioned that it restores a majority, when in fact the word majority is not found in the text of the bill. It does not guarantee a majority. So it is not true to say that it will always result in a majority result. Even in Portland, Mayor Brennan won with less than a majority of the ballots cast.
Portland uses ranked choice voting locally.
And there are municipalities across the country that do use ranked choice voting. But Maine would be the first state to use it for 151 state representative seats, 35 state senate seats, the race for governor, and 2 federal races, the race for House of Representatives and the race for the U.S. Senate. It does not include the race for president, and many of the op-eds I've seen include that and refer to the race for president and wishing, I guess, that would be part of the proposal. But it is not what we're voting on, that we're voting on the other races mentioned, not the race for president. So the exhausted ballots was where we come in here. And there are ballots that are thrown away and discarded. So not everybody's vote does count the same way with ranked choice voting. And there are some concerns about one man, one vote, one person, one vote with this. And I understand that there are some scholars that say that this is has been found to be constitutional, and others disagree.
On the constitutionality question, the issue here is, In Maine's constitution, the word plurality is used.
Correct.
And so that's not a majority. A plurality is just more votes than anyone else.
That's
and
right.
Your concern is that would have to be changed.
Well, there were three violations of the Constitution, according to our Attorney General Janet Mills' six-page opinion. There's more than one violation of the Constitution here. And one of them does, in fact, refer to the difference between the two words majority and plurality. Now, Maine has a very interesting history. In 1878, we had an armed conflict, a very contentious three-way race for governor, which apparently resulted in a cannon at the front door of the State House and snipers on the roof and militia pointing guns at the State House. We had to call in our retired Civil War hero, Joshua Chamberlain, from Bowdoin College to help settle things down. And as a result of all of that, the Maine Constitution was changed very clearly by one word. And the word majority was changed to the word plurality. In the state of Maine, those two words have very distinct meanings. They're not interchangeable. And some would argue that they basically are interchangeable. And I would argue that they clearly are not, especially given Maine's historical precedence.
Kyle, I'll let you respond to this constitutional question, then we'll get back into some of the nuts and bolts.
Well, Representative Zaraki talked about an election in Maine in 1878 in which the legislature at the time had the power to pick Maine's governor if no candidate received an outright majority. The legislature chose the candidate who came in third place, and there was an armed insurrection, as Heather Zaraki said. But the people amended the Constitution to ensure that they had the power to elect Maine's leaders, not the legislature. This initiative for ranked choice voting is designed to put more power in the hands of voters. This reform is in the same spirit as Maine's history. Look, courts in four states have already ruled that ranked choice voting is fully constitutional. It upholds one person, one vote, the Equal Protection Clause under the United States Constitution. That's a federal court, two state Supreme Courts, and a state circuit court. And in addition, ranked choice voting has been upheld as a plurality voting system, which is the chief attack on this point. The Massachusetts Supreme Court ruled in 1941 that ranked choice voting is a plurality voting system. So 75 years of legal precedent in our country is that ranked choice voting is fully constitutional. Doesn't mean there's not good people who disagree, but the facts are the facts, and legal precedent is legal precedent.
Let's go back to how this actually works. So we walk into the voting booth, and by the way, this would apply to races where there are more than two candidates.
Correct.
So you have multiple candidates, say you have five candidates. Mm-hmm. You walk in, you make your choice for who you'd like to go first, and then everyone else in descending order of preference.
Right.
Are you obliged to do that, or can you just vote for your favorite?
No, you can rank as many or few as you like. Now, what we see in places across the United States that have ranked choice voting is that voters overwhelmingly choose to rank the candidates. I think in Portland, this last time around, there was a three-way race for mayor, and Portland uses ranked choice voting. Over 80% of voters ranked at least two candidates. So once voters have the power to express their opinions about more than one candidate, they exercise that, just like we do in our daily lives in ranking things.
And so after the first round of voting, if no one has a majority, that's more than 50%, if someone does have a majority, they win. If they don't, the candidate with the least votes is then eliminated. And those votes are redistributed to the rest of the field.
That's right. If your favorite candidate is eliminated, then we look to see who is your second choice and add it to, think about it as piles of votes, right, for three different candidates. If your favorite candidate is eliminated, we look to see who your second choice is, pick up the ballot, move it to the other pile until someone gets to a majority. So it's a round-by-round process. It looks just like actual runoff elections, which a number of places have, but without the cost and delay that comes with actual runoff elections.
Yeah.
I would disagree with that. I would say that it's not exactly like a runoff election. With a runoff election, the individuals with the most votes, the top two vote-getters, then have a new election with new ballots printed, and those are the people that were most liked, and they are then trying to vie for the winning spot. Whereas with ranked choice voting, someone that came in third place could win. So it's not the top two vote getters. It's not exactly like a traditional runoff election.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the process is exactly the same. So State Treasurer Terry Hayes, Maine's independent chief financial officer, has looked at this reform and said, you know, it is the most cost-effective and efficient way to conduct runoffs. It does work just like actual runoffs. You know, there are some politicians and pundits who would prefer additional 4 weeks of negative campaigning, 4 more weeks of campaigning. There are some PACs and parties that may try to suppress voter turnout. But why do that when you can have the same result with one ballot, one election, less cost, more voter participation? And one of the other problems with actual runoff elections versus ranked choice voting is that actual runoff elections disenfranchise overseas voters, including the men and women who are serving our country abroad, for whom there's not enough time to print a ballot, send it overseas, and get it back in a four-week period. Ranked choice voting enfranchises those voters.
But to Heather's point, so in some circumstances, say in a five-way race, if someone came in third after the first round and was everybody's choice for third, there is a process by which they could rise to the top over multiple rounds.
Well, in a race with three candidates, if one candidate comes in, if no candidate receives a majority, and the candidate who comes in third place is then eliminated, they're gone. And so we've now limited it down to the remaining two, the top two finishers. If you had five candidates, you eliminate the candidate fifth place round by round until someone gets to a majority.
But they can rise from the bottom up. Heather's point is
exactly.
At the end you had two favorites amongst the voters. But in this case, through this process, the third choice – in other words, you might be electing someone that was everyone's third choice at the beginning.
No, because
that's
right. No. With ranked choice voting, you have to get enough first choice rankings in order to even compete in these elections. So it's the candidate with the least support that's eliminated round by round. And if you can't attract enough first choice rankings, if you don't have enough viability and reach to get enough first choices, you're never going to win. If we look at races across the United States where ranked choice voting is used, about 90% of the time when you need an instant runoff, which is what we call these round by rounds, the candidate who won, got the most votes in the first round still ends up winning. Only about 10% of the time does the candidate in second place, who was in second place in the first round, end up overcoming that first place finisher round by round, because the candidate who may have gotten the most votes in the first round was actually opposed by a majority of voters, and ranked choice voting ensures that candidates who are opposed by a majority of voters can never win, in addition to making sure that you never have to vote for the lesser of two evils when there's another candidate you really like.
I would like to just mention that there is a video out that does show how ranked choice voting works with colorful post-it notes. What it does not show or illustrate at all is the phenomenon of exhausted ballots, whereby if someone chooses to only vote for one person, and that person ends up being the loser, the person with the least amount of ballots, then that person's vote is deducted from the total number of ballots cast, redefining the majority. There was a race in San Francisco where roughly 18,000 people voted, and with simple math, you can see that 9,000 plus one person would need to be voting in order to determine a majority, but in fact, the winner won with 4,321 votes because so many ballots were exhausted.
And we can get back into this math, but the math itself points up a question. I'm wondering, Heather, is this complicated?
Yes.
Too complicated
yes.
in your view
yes,
to not only for voters to understand, but for the state to carry out?
Well, I think it's very complicated, and you know when we work bills in the legislature, we look to other places that have implemented these various ideas. So we looked at California. Former mayor of Oakland is the current governor of California, Jerry Brown. About 3 weeks ago, he vetoed ranked choice voting. He has firsthand experience with this measure in Oakland. They've had it there for years. Now, some will say it's a sour grape situation there as to why. I disagree. His veto message was clear. It said it's overly complicated and confusing, and it deprives voters of genuinely informed choice. Genuinely informed choice is because candidates want to be liked. They want to come in second. They may not be as forthcoming with their true position on issues.
So you mean strategically it benefits them to be just under the radar there.
Exactly. And so we talk about strategic voting. I think it exacerbates strategic voting.
But you would say that may – I'll let you answer that. But you would also say, but look, this is good because it does away with these highly polarized campaigns that are all designed around the core bases at the extremes.
Absolutely right. And candidates do have to stand for something. If you don't stand for something and articulate a clear values, vision, message, ideas, you're not going to be anybody's first choice, right? There's no way you can win a ranked choice election. So you've got to stand for something. But yes, you do have to reach out beyond your base and talk to voters who don't agree with you on the issues and say, if I can't be your first choice, I'd like to be your second choice. Let's actually talk about the issues and find out where we can find common ground. So this holds candidates more accountable to people on the issues.
But fair to say that the complexity has been an issue in getting in the course of the campaign or getting people to understand what they're voting for?
So we've had about 25 ranked choice beer elections across the state in the last month and a half, where people have come from Brewer to Kittery to Farmington and Skowhegan to craft breweries where they've ranked their beers in order of preference, their first choice, second choice, third choice. We've had zero spoiled ballots in any of those elections. And that's true of places across the United States that have ranked choice voting. In Portland, 94% of voters say it's easy or somewhat easy to fill out the ballot. Spoiled ballot rates in terms of voters having problems with the ballot are equivalent in places in the United States that have ranked choice voting that don't. And when you look at voter reported data, voters in cities, and Rutgers University did a recent study, voters in cities with ranked choice voting report significantly less negative campaigning, significantly greater satisfaction with their elections, and overwhelmingly voters say it's easy to use. If I go to Dunkin' Donuts in the morning and they're out of a multigrain bagel, I get the garlic bagel. I know what my second choice is. I know what my second choice is in a race for governor or U.S. Senate or Congress. These are high information elections. Voters are a lot smarter than some politicians give them credit for.
All right. You're listening to Maine Calling. The number, 1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. We are talking about question 5 on the November ballot. It's about ranked choice voting. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Support for Your Vote 2016 coverage comes from Mimic, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy. On the web at Mimic.com. Also by Lambert Coffin, providing legal services designed to help Maine farmers and food producers grow the local food movement. LambertCoffin.com. And the Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement at Colby College, confronting complex issues through innovative programming, service, and scholarship.
Imagine you're on a sailing trip, thousands of miles from land. But in the ocean, you see plenty of signs of human life. Plastic bags.
Washing basket. A TV.
In the middle of the ocean?
In the middle of the ocean. You'd jump in for a swim and you'd find a toothbrush.
How our waste is making our world more toxic. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Join us tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock and Wednesday evening at 11 here on Maine Public Radio.
You may imagine that purring putty tat on your sofa is soft and dependent, but you'd be wrong.
They can make a go of it in a studio apartment or patrol thousands of acres in the middle of the woods and do fine in either environment.
The independent pint-sized lion in the living room. I'm Steve Curwood, and that's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Sunday morning, 7 o'clock, here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, a Your Vote 2016 discussion, debate over question 5 on the November ballot, ranked choice voting. We have two guests on opposing sides of the issue in our studio today. Representing Yes on 5 is Kyle Bailey, campaign manager of the Committee for Ranked Choice Voting. And representing No on 5 is Representative Heather Siraki of Scarborough. Join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Again, Kyle, to the nuts and bolts of if this were passed, how would the state of Maine be able to do these tabulations for all of these races on a very busy election night?
So ranked choice voting imposes no additional administrative or financial burden on cities and towns. So just like now, town clerks would count the votes for every voter's first choice. That's what would get reported on election night. If there needs to be additional rounds of tabulation, the Secretary of State's office envisions that that would be done at one or more central locations. So it might take a couple days to know the final winner in some of these races, just like now where we wait a few days oftentimes with, you know, we may have a dozen or so races that go to recount. But it's certainly better than waiting 4 weeks with an actual runoff election. This is the most cost-effective and efficient way to have runoffs. And to speak back to Representative Saraki's point, it does restore. In the final round of tabulation, the candidate who wins will always receive a majority of votes cast in that round. And if you as a voter only ranked one candidate, your vote is made known on election night when the results are published. Your favorite candidate lost under either system, but the fact that you said, I only like one of these candidates and to heck with the others, that's made known with this process. And you have the same power just as you do under the current system to make that known.
Actually, I would disagree. I don't think the voters truly understand that. And it is a majority of the leftover ballots. It's not a majority of the ballots that are cast. So that's basically what you're looking at here. That's why you cannot use the word majority in the text of the bill, and that's where we're going to have some conflict, I think, with the constitutionality of this measure, as well as a tabulation piece. The Maine Constitution requires that the tabulating take place locally in a municipality. This is a clear violation of the Maine Constitution when you have to cart hundreds of thousands of ballots potentially from all over the state to one location. You're talking armed escorts, additional staff at the municipal level to cart up those boxes. Then you have to unpack the boxes and have additional staff to run all those ballots through at the state level. So there is a cost, and the software is going to have to be purchased. That is also an additional cost.
Yeah. So not true. Ballots are still counted at the local round, and the process looks just like the way we do recounts in Maine. So it's not a new process. It's simply a process we've been using for a long time that's applied to this system. You know, and I think it's important also to just take a step back again, and you know, we dove right into some of these specifics. But in addition to restoring majority rule and eliminating the spoiler effect, you know, a lot of people are feeling right now frustrated with the process. 89% of Maine voters say the system is broken. It's not working. This is something we could do now to improve it so that you never have to vote for the lesser of two evils when there's another candidate you really like. You're free to vote for the candidate you like the best. And candidates have to reach beyond their base and pull more broadly. That's transformative for our politics.
All right, we'll go to Bob and Machias here in a moment. But isn't this really though, a reaction to the past two gubernatorial elections where the spoiler effect really disappointed a lot of Democrats and felt that they were robbed? Is this not a reaction to that?
No, it's a reaction to 40 years of governor's elections in which the candidate who won received less than a majority and an increasing number of U.S. Senate, congressional, legislative races where that's also the case. I think voters are frustrated with our politics. They're looking for change. And this is an initiative that's broadly supported by Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Greens, and Libertarians. 73,000 Mainers signed petitions to put this on the ballot. And look, you know, former Republican State Senator Peter Mills doesn't support this because of sour grapes. Former State Representative Stacey Fitz, a Republican from Pittsfield, doesn't support this because it's sour grapes. Nelson Durgan, Republican, member of the Bangor City Council and served in the McKernan administration, doesn't support this because of sour grapes. It's not about one party or one candidate. This is about improving Maine politics for generations to come, and we have the power to change the way we elect our leaders, to put more choice and more voice in the hands of voters so our democracy works better.
Yeah. All right. Let's go now to Bob in Machias. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the program.
Yeah. Hi. I've been thinking about this issue, and I can't imagine being on my 18th anniversary and telling my spouse, "Well, you were my number four choice." I don't think that would go over very big. And when you vote for the best candidate. And saying, well, maybe I like this one, maybe I like that one. I mean, that sounds like Lindsay Lohan on the Mean Girls list. You know, it doesn't seem the proper thing. This is an election in the state of Maine. It's not American Idol. It's not Facebook with likes. You vote for a candidate, you vote for a candidate. You pick your spouse, even if she was number four or he was number four, you don't tell him that.
All right. So We'll let Kyle respond.
Well, a couple of things. We rank choices every day of our lives. And as I said, when I go to Dunkin' Donuts, if they're out of my favorite bagel, I get my second bagel. We rank the colleges we go to or the technical schools we go to. We rank our choices every day. Which car am I going to buy? You know, maybe it's a cost-benefit analysis, right? We rank choices every day of our lives. This simply gives us the power to rank politicians for public office. And it's a better system. I mean, Sandy Mazel, who is a U.S. Expert on elections at Colby College, says that this system restores majority rule, eliminates the spoiler effect, improves civility in campaigns with none of the downsides that our opponents have said. So, you know, I would say to this voter and every voter across our state, are you frustrated with the status quo? Is politics working for you? If you want a better system, we have the power to make that change because party leaders and legislators in Augusta are unlikely to change the system, but we have the power to do that in a period of now about 2 weeks.
All right, let's go to Jackson in Casco. Hi, Jackson.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was just wondering how exactly the system helps eliminate this negative campaigning and mudslinging that we've seen in elections and make candidates promote their own substantive issues.
Yeah, it seems like negative campaigning is out there because someone believes it works, it moves mm-hmm. the needle, and that's why so much money is being put into the
There area. Are races that have identified that has not decreased negative campaigning with ranked choice voting, too. So I know the proponents like to say that it does, but there is also evidence to the contrary. So I don't know that we can definitively say whether it would or would not. There is evidence in some races where it has been very negative, and it's a very subjective matter when you ask someone, was that a negative campaign or not? If you're being attacked, it feels negative. If you're in favor of it, it feels different.
So Rutgers University did a study of cities across the United States with ranked choice voting and cities without. What they found is that voters in places with ranked choice voting reported about 40% less negative campaigning. Not just voters, but candidates. Candidates were actually saying that they were getting less mud slung at them. So this is a better system. It does improve civility in campaigns. And you think about it. Let's say the three of us are running against each other, right? Now, under the current system, my incentive is to say, you know, you don't like him. She can't win. Vote for me. And so it becomes this entire conversation about spoilers, about vote splitting, not about issues. With this system, I have to reach out to voters who like you the best and say, if I can't be your first choice, let me be your second choice, knowing that, you know, if I sling mud at you, you know, a voter who likes you the best is less likely to make me their second choice. And so negative campaigning can backfire. So not only does ranked choice voting make parties, PACs, and politicians think differently about how they engage with voters, but it makes them think twice about how they engage with one another.
It's interesting to me that the League of Women Voters here in the state of Maine has endorsed ranked choice voting, but the League of Women Voters in Santa Clara, San Jose has not. And they have found multiple, exactly the opposite. And out in California, there are a number of cities that have ranked choice voting. They have firsthand experience, and they are not finding some of these claims to bear out.
Note from Martha, why wouldn't it be better to simply amend the Constitution to say that candidates must have a majority of the vote and then have a runoff if necessary? Ranked choice voting seems to try to do two things at once, and you end up with opponents on both sides.
Well, it is true that ranked choice voting does the same thing as an actual runoff, but with one ballot and one election. I think we've already talked a little bit about some of the downsides with actual runoffs. They both restore majority rule, but that's where the similarities end. So ranked choice voting can help reduce negativity in campaigns. It eliminates the spoiler effect, which actual runoffs don't do, because you're still trying to figure out, I want to make sure at least one of these two candidates gets in the top two in order to advance to a December runoff. You disenfranchise overseas voters, absentee voters, shut-ins who can't participate, who find it difficult to get to the polls because there's not an absentee voter process. In addition to the cost, it would cost up to $2 million to have actual runoffs in our state. That imposes additional administrative and financial burdens, not just on the state, but on towns and cities. Ranked choice voting imposes no additional financial burdens or administrative burdens on cities and towns.
Would you prefer runoffs? Or
I personally, that's not the measure before us, but right. I would prefer a runoff over this system. And for another, it is important to me for your listeners and viewers to understand that in my mind, the rule of law is very important here. There are three violations to the Constitution, and thank you, Martha, for bringing that up. It is the cart before the horse. You have to fix the Constitution before you vote on something that's blatantly unconstitutional. It's illegal to put this measure into law backwards. One of the violations includes the way we break a tie. Why would you change that? Why would that text even be in the bill? I have yet to have one answer on why you'd break a tie by lot rather than by a vote of the legislature, which is in the Maine Constitution. And I still don't have an answer to that question.
I'm happy to answer that. So in round by round with ranked choice voting, it's possible, you know, at some point you may have a tie. You've got to figure out how to way to break that tie to continue the process to have a final round of tabulation in which someone gets a majority. That's a pretty simple, straightforward answer. The reason why we are not pursuing a constitutional amendment is because it doesn't seem to be necessary. I mean, the constitutional scholars at the University of Maine School of Law have looked at ranked choice voting, question 5, said it's fully constitutional. And 75 years of legal precedent in this country says that ranked choice voting is a plurality voting system. And furthermore, when you look at the history of Maine's constitution and why we amended the word majority and replaced it with plurality, it's because the legislature, the politicians in Augusta, were choosing our leaders. And the people said, no, enough. We want to choose. This initiative is in that same spirit of putting more power in the hands of voters. So you have more choice in our elections, and your voice matters more with a ranked choice ballot.
1-800-399-3566. I'll let you respond quickly before we go back to the phones.
Real briefly, the League of Women Voters here in Maine held a moot court in February of 2014, unanimously agreeing that this measure is unconstitutional, and then they drafted amendments to the Constitution. The cart is before the horse on three measures.
Hold on, I just need to correct the record there. So there was an academic study and exercise in 2014 where there was a moot court conducted by the League of Women Voters of Maine, mm-hmm. but since that time, two of the three judges have backed off their position, saying they think it needs a constitutional amendment. One has reversed himself entirely, Jamie Kilbirth, a former Deputy Attorney General of Maine, and another, Judge Waltham, who's walked back and said, well, actually, I think this might be constitutional. And so, you know, people are exploring this issue in Maine. They're looking at it. What I think it's really important is, as Representative Siraki said, she would oppose the system whether she thinks it is constitutional or not. This is a red herring designed to distract and dissuade voters. What voters are really looking at here is the merits of the question. Are they tired of politics as usual? Do they want candidates to win with a majority? Do they never want to have to vote for the lesser of two evils when there's another candidate they really like? And if that's true, they ought to vote yes on 5.
Let's go now to Phil in Portland. Hi, Phil.
Hey there. There's been a lot of focus recently on the ease and fairness of the electoral process. I've got a couple of questions. One, what, if any, additional burdens would ranked choice voting place on local elected officials and town clerks who are responsible for the integrity of our system? And two, I believe Ms. Siraki said that Michael Brennan did not gain a majority of the votes in the Portland mayoral election a couple of years ago, but he did win the first vote. He had the most votes. Mm-hmm. And so my question is, in that tabulating process, which I, as I understand it, will go on in Augusta, does that slow down the reporting of the in the process? Does it slow down the reporting of results? And B, does it, when the results are reported, do you see all of the rounds, or do you only see the last round?
Yeah. Do we get to see the sausage being made?
Well, it's my understanding that they do get to see the rounds. It may take some time, though, and you're right. There has to be a cost borne on the local municipalities in order to box up all of these ballots. Mm-hmm. I don't know who pays for the armed escorts to transport all these ballots.
The state.
And so that would be the taxpayers of the state, or you're locally are going to be picking up the tab one way or another on this. So there is a cost. This is not free to implement an instant runoff voting system. So there are some costs. It will be expensive. It is more complicated than people realize.
And it could be a few days before we find out.
And at the end of the day, if you want to use Mayor Brennan as an example, the result was the same. So why do we need to do this when most of the time the person with the most votes wins and the person in an instant runoff wins as well? So it's a rare situation, I think, where you have a different outcome.
Yeah. So it changes the outcome 10% of the time. It improves the process 100% of the time. That's the power of ranked choice voting. We're so frustrated with our politics. This is something we can do now to improve it. Will it take a couple days to know the final winner? Yeah, it could, but it's better than waiting 4 weeks for an actual runoff, a delayed runoff election, which Representative Shiraki says that she supports. In addition to all the problems that come with actual runoff elections, why do it when there's one ballot and one election with the same result that ensures that the most number of people are participating in electing our leaders and they actually get a chance to express their truer preferences about the candidates?
To join the conversation, it's 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We're going to take another quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Support for Your Vote 2016 coverage comes from Lambert Coffin, Partner for Growth, offering strategic legal counsel to Maine businesses on the web at lambertcoffin.com. Also by Memic, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy, on the web at memic.com. And the Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement at Colby College, confronting complex issues through innovative programming, service, and scholarship.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Dr. Atul Gawande, a surgeon, talks about cancer treatment and music with the songwriter Andrew Bird.
You made this thing that's like a regular part of what I do and turned it into art in a way that I didn't really even understand could be possible. I mean, I play this song for patients, and I play it in my operating room doing these operations.
That's next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Join us tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock and again Sunday evening at 11 o'clock.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. Kurdish and Iraqi forces open a new front in the fight to retake Mosul from the Islamic State. Ecuador cuts off the internet access to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. And China and the Philippines hold talks over new multi-billion dollar deals.
That's hour two of the Diane Rehm Show, the International Week in Review, coming up in 20 minutes here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today, a Your Vote 2016 program. Today's topic, the debate over ranked choice voting. Representing no on question five is Representative Heather Shiraki of Scarborough. Kyle Bailey is the campaign manager of the Committee for Ranked Choice Voting. And not surprisingly, he represents yes on five. Join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to the phones to Tanya in Hodgston. Hi, Tanya.
Hi there.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Okay. My question is, when governors are elected by a minority of voters, what's the potential for gridlock and dysfunction in Augusta after that happens?
By a plurality
of voters.
Yeah.
I mean, when politicians get elected with 30 or 35% of the vote, they become accountable to that base. They keep dipping back into that well. And, you know, they may be opposed by a majority of voters. And before they even take office, we've seen this with the last two governors. So before Governor LePage even took office, the 61% bumper sticker started to pop up. And his opponent said, you're not legitimate. A majority of voters didn't vote for you. When John Baldacci, a Democrat, was reelected with 38% of the vote in 2006. The Republicans started issuing press releases calling him the 38% governor. And in fact, Republicans introduced ranked choice voting legislation in 2007 in response to that election. So we've been grappling with this for a long time. And, you know, to the caller's point, this does give our leaders a mandate to govern with a majority coalition backing them from the election to try to bring people together and get things done. So the voices of voters in the middle matter a lot more and their voices are heard, and the special interest in extreme politics has less power in this system.
Heather Shiraki, isn't it true that when you have a three-way race, it seems to be in particular these three-way races, and you have an independent or third-party candidate who is viewed by some as simply as the spoiler, as they're not going to win, but they're going to eat some of the votes of the two major parties. That is a factor. Is there something that could be done about that's fair or that might be different from ranked choice voting? How do we get at that problem, or should we just accept it?
I think that it would warrant a discussion, but this proposal before the voters does not attack that issue. And I would also go back and say that in a three-way race, some people view a majority as one-third plus some, not 50% plus one. So it depends on how you view this. And everyone's people's definition of how effective a governor has been can, again, be flavored by your own particular party and your philosophies. I view Governor LePage as very effective. He has done a lot of good work. I think Governor Angus King won with less than 50%, and I think a lot of people would say he was an effective governor. So I don't necessarily agree with that argument at all. So I think that, and I would like to clarify, that I personally prefer the plurality system. If you were asking me to choose between ranked choice voting and the instant runoff and a true runoff, I would prefer the runoff system.
Well, the status quo isn't working. I mean, and to your point, ranked choice voting does eliminate the spoiler effect in elections. You no longer have to read a poll to figure out how to vote because you want to prevent someone else from winning. You can actually go in the voting booth and say, you know what, I think this candidate would do the best job. They're my first choice. But if they can't win and no candidate gets a majority, I'd like to have this candidate as my second choice. That's what we do in our daily lives when we rank our choices. This just gives us the same power to do the same thing with politicians in a way that encourages, you know, parties, PACs, and politicians to engage differently with voters, to listen to voters, to hear voters' voices, and to govern more collaboratively. And we have seen in places that have ranked choice voting across the United States that leaders who are elected do try to reach out beyond their base. Betsy Hodges, the mayor of Minneapolis, tells a lot with voters, talks to the media a lot about how she ran a grassroots campaign. She asked voters to be their second, even third choices in a really crowded race. And as the mayor of the city, she thinks about how to be collaborative, how to build coalitions, how to bring people together to get things done. Wouldn't that be nice to see in Augusta?
Let's go to Eric in Orono. Hi, Eric.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I was going to vote for ranked choice voting, but after hearing this, I'm a little concerned, and here's why. So say there's five candidates, and the last place candidate gets eliminated after the first round because the first two place candidates don't have a majority of the vote. Well, that last place candidate is probably on one or the other side of the political spectrum, on one of the extremes. And so it's only those voters, say that they're far right wing, for example, only those voters' second choice votes get redistributed to go towards the first two or to go towards the final winner. And so then the third and the fourth place, anybody that voted for the third or fourth place candidates as their first choice, their votes would not count towards the final first and second place winners. Is that a correct interpretation of how this would work?
I would say that a lot of people view this as the ballots of the loser, the ballots of the person or individual that garnered the least number of votes are determining the winner.
Well, that's just not true. So under the current system, the way we elect our leaders, politicians, again, can win with 30 or 35% of the vote, who are opposed by 60 or 65% of voters. That's a real problem that needs to be solved, and ranked choice voting does that. So with ranked choice voting, round by round, the candidate in last place loses. So, you know, what will probably happen 95% of the time is it's the Green, the Libertarian, the Independent who are probably eliminated. You get back to a Democrat and a Republican. But the voices of voters who like those candidates the best are heard. And yeah, you know what? Maybe there are opportunities for the Green candidate or the Libertarian candidate or the Independent candidate. If they can actually reach out and talk to more voters, run a grassroots campaign, ask voters to be not just their first choice but their second choice, it does level the playing field for independent third-party candidates while also ensuring that the two big parties can't just win by energizing enthusiastic narrow bases of support. They do have to reach out to the broader middle of voters.
All right, let's go. Let's see. Thank you, Eric. We'll go to Holly in Westbrook. Hi, Holly.
Hi. I thought I would mention something that came to my attention this summer. The Ontario legislature in Canada passed a law that gives the Ontario municipalities the option of using ranked choice ballots in their next municipal elections in 2018. And one of the reasons they did this was because they said the winning candidate will have a higher percentage of the vote and therefore a broader mandate. And I myself feel that the current system, which allows a candidate to win who is least favored, is really undemocratic. And I feel ranked choice voting is really allows independence and allows a broader view of topics. It's really allows more choice and more democracy. And I don't see why people wouldn't want to have democracy work. The current system, for me, is not working.
Yeah. Heather, do you want to take that first?
I would say that I'm sorry that you feel that way. And that, again, when you have multiple candidates, that some people view three people in a race, one-third plus some, is a majority in a three-way race. So it depends on how you view the majority. And the most, when you have a number of people voting for their second choice, then determining and sort of artificially providing a majority, it just doesn't ring true to a lot of people. The biggest problem with ranked choice voting here in Maine isn't the actual proposal. The problem is there are so many conflicts with the Constitution. The way we tabulate the votes, the location of where we tabulate the votes is a big hurdle that has not been addressed. And then there are the definitions of majority and plurality that are being called into question and the way we break a tie. So before you even consider the actual proposal, make sure you're factoring in also the violations to the Constitution.
Well, 33% of the vote isn't a majority, so let's not try to redefine what a majority is. A majority is 50% plus one. And we ought to have that in our elections because our politicians shouldn't be able to win by energizing an enthusiastic, narrow base of supporters backed by special interests who are opposed by a majority of voters and slip through the cracks and win. That's what our current system allows, and the caller is absolutely right. We need to restore majority rule, and we can do it with ranked choice voting in a way that allows you to express your true preferences about the candidates. You never have to vote for a lesser of two evils when there's another candidate you like the best. You have the freedom to vote for your favorite candidate. You can vote your hopes and your dreams, not your fears. And a lot of people are voting these days against candidates, against parties. I mean, look at the presidential election. A lot of voters are voting against someone rather than voting for someone. This is something we could do now to transform our democracy so voters feel empowered to vote their hopes and dreams and not just simply voting against someone. Because if we want to get young people excited about voting and engaging them in the process, the politics as we're seeing it play out right now where everybody's voting against someone all the time and it's so negative, we're going to see a decline in participation among young voters, and we've got to find ways to engage those voters, and this can do that.
Some observers have said, look, these are all clearly issues in the modern campaigning, the lack of civility, the negative campaigning, as you say, the voting against other people. But the way to get at this is through human means, not by some voting structure, that it takes people to change the way that the debates are done, that we have the conversation over who we're going to elect. How do you respond to those who say this should be addressed, but it should be done by humans and not by tabulation?
Well, there's only, you know, ranked choice voting is not a panacea. It's not designed to solve all of our problems in politics, and we have some serious problems about a lack of civility in our politics. Is this something we can do to kind of help? Absolutely. I think if you tweak the process, if you change the process, encourage better behavior. Have candidates not just think about how to win with their base, but have to reach out and talk to more voters, listen to more voters, be informed by voters who have a different worldview. That's constructive and helpful for candidates who are then elected. And think about, you know, as they're sitting in their chair in the legislature, you know, I had that conversation with that voter when I was doing doors, and we didn't agree on this issue, and they raised some good points. I mean, we're almost to the point where we don't listen to each other anymore. We get our news from cable news networks and others that reinforce our own ideologies. We can block news feeds and friends on Facebook who have different points of view. That's a problem. But, you know, one of the things that we can do now to try to address this, in addition to encouraging more civility, talking about how to engage more constructively with one another, is changing the process to encourage and incentivize better behavior on the parts of parties, PACs, and politicians who get away with a lot right now, who wouldn't get away with a lot under a ranked choice system. They would have to think differently.
Yeah. Only a few minutes left, Heather. I wondered if you wanted to sort of wrap up again your concerns about this question.
My first and foremost concern is that this is a violation of our rule of law. I take an oath as a legislator to uphold both the United States and the Maine Constitution. That is not a quaint ceremony. It's something that's very serious. Our Attorney General has identified three violations to our Maine Constitution. If we want to consider ranked choice voting as a possible way of voting, a voting system in the future, we need to address the Constitution first.
Kyle, Your case one more time.
Yeah, I mean, every time ranked choice voting has been challenged in the courts have said it's fully constitutional, 75 years of plurality voting system. Look, we need a system that works, where candidates with the best ideas, not the biggest bank accounts, have a fighting chance. You should never have to vote for a lesser of two evils when there's another candidate you like best. Ranked choice voting gives you the freedom to vote for the candidate you like the best without worrying you'll have to like the candidate you like the least and without ever feeling like your vote is wasted. This is something we can do now to improve politics in Maine. It's not a panacea, but with all the problems that we face in our politics today, the increased polarization, hyperpartisanship, negativity, gridlock, we've got to be looking for positive solutions that move us in the right direction. And we've got to adopt ranked choice voting by voting yes on 5 this November to give voters more voice and more choice in our elections and to improve our democracy.
Because this does take a little bit of thinking, as we've heard the conversation today, it's involved. Where should voters go to get information if they don't quite understand how this works?
They can check out our website on yeson5.me. That's yeson5.me. To read more information, there's some great videos there that explain it as well, and I know you're putting up some information on your website. Also, the League of Women Voters of Maine is a great nonpartisan source of information. You can Google the League of Women Voters of Maine, find their website, hear both sides of the story. And we know that if voters hear both sides, overwhelmingly say, why haven't we been doing this? This is just common sense.
And if I might say, yes. We have a Ranked Choice No Facebook page, and I would also encourage your viewers and listeners to read Janet Mills' 6-page legal opinion. Our Attorney General has weighed in. Thank you.
All right. Heather, Kyle, thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Heather Soraki is a representative from Scarborough. Kyle Bailey is campaign manager of the Committee for Ranked Choice Voting. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. We had additional technical help from John Keimel, Dan Works, and John Bradford. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. The program will also be shown on Maine Public Television at a future date, and please visit the Maine Calling website for more details. You can find all of our Your Vote 2016 interviews and debates online at mainepublic.org. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Your Vote 26 edition of Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
You make Your Vote 2016 coverage possible, as do MEMIC, a workers' compensation insurance company dedicated to safer workplaces, fair treatment for all workers, and a strong Maine economy, on the web at MEMIC.com. Also, the Goldfarb Center for Public Affairs and Civic Engagement at Colby College, confronting complex issues through innovative programming, service, and scholarship. And by Lambert Coffin, legal advisors for Maine families in estate planning, probate administration, and will contests. Online at lambertcoffin.com. And just as a reminder, for those of you who are fans of Down Memory Lane with Toby LaBoudelier, his new show will be available today starting at 2 o'clock. That's just now. And it's not just online at mainepublic.org, but also on our new Maine Public Classical channel. You can hear the new channel all around the state on our HD frequencies already in Bangor, in Waterville, Freiburg, and Portland. And Friday evenings also brings us a full 7 hours of jazz on Maine Public Classical. More information about our new classical channel and how to hear the new channel is at mainepublic.org.
The late David Baker was not only an influential jazz teacher, he was also a phenomenal composer and arranger. The Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra performs Baker's music in a recent double disc. This week on Jazz Tonight, we'll hear some of it and quite a bit more. My name is Rich Tozier. I hope you can join me Friday evening at 8 on Maine Public Classical. Jazz Tonight is part of a whole evening of jazz, 7 hours worth, which gets underway every Friday at 7 with Marion McPartland.
And this is listener-supported Maine Public Radio, WMEA Portland, 90.1, WMEH Bangor, 90.9, WMEW Waterville, 91.3, WMED in Calais, 89.7, WMEM Presque Isle, 106.1, WMEF Fort Kent, 106.5, WMEP Camden, 90.5.